The following programming is sponsored by BLS Productions. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
This week has been a little crazy. Sit back and get your recap of what happened and what is happening in sports, entertainment, movies, TV, politics, technology, and current events. You can count on getting a dose of comedy, great guests, fun, the best talk around, and even more outrageous fun. That's why we love those two guys. Fun, fascinating, and real. We are live with the Brian and Lee Show. So unbelievable, we could not make this stuff up, even if we tried.
And it's great to be back here on another Friday morning here in the Delaware Valley. I'm Brian.
I'm Lee.
And this is the Brian and Lee Show coming at you on WWDB 860 AM. And would you believe it's already the end of September?
Yeah, last show of September. Man. Where did it's fall, you know?
Exactly.
Where did summer go?
The pool's been covered up.
Yeah, you've been lying on the beach, and boom, all of a sudden.
Exactly. Sand gets blown in your face.
All of a sudden, it's fall again.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, this is we're into the holiday season, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah.
Newsflash.
Yeah.
Halloween started August 1st.
No.
According to supermarkets.
Yeah. Well, there's candy out. I know that. There's a lot of candy.
And there's been monster cereals.
Yeah, monster cereals. That all gets started.
Exactly.
And people won't start knocking on the door like for two.
In fact, it's hilarious. There's a new meme going around Facebook.
Yeah.
Where somebody's saying, "All I want for Christmas is you." And then they get smacked by Jack Skellington. And the speech bubble says, "This is Halloween."
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Without a doubt.
Exactly.
This is it, man.
But now we know it's the fall because the Eagles are making us sweat.
Yes, this is it, man. What those games were to, you know.
Insane.
Yeah. Odd at a game. Yeah, again.
It's still miraculous, the fact that they won the game with leaving 6 or 7 points on the board.
Well,
off the board, yeah. I should say, on the field.
Well, again, the interception, you know, there was too much. There was interceptions.
There was fumbles.
Fumbles. Hurt did not play well.
There were short plays.
Yeah. And then you got injuries. You know, you have all of our receiving crew is decimated. Yeah.
Well, that's no excuse. I mean, we won the Super Bowl with about half the team broken.
Yeah, that's true. But this is not a Super Bowl team, I don't think.
Not yet.
Not yet. And then they make some dumb mistakes. You know, Sirianni makes a call to go for it on fourth down.
He's just lucky that this time he made it.
Well, yeah, but no, you gotta get the points.
Because that led to the touchdown and to the 2-point conversion.
Yeah, that did. But
earlier in
the game.
You mean, yeah.
Yeah, they gave up the 3 points.
Exactly.
And it doesn't have to come down to the wire all the time.
You can't keep doing that.
No. Championship teams are teams that, you know, blow other teams out of
exactly.
the water. Easy. They win like 42-4 or something like that.
That's not even a real score in football.
No, but it could be.
You really think somebody's going to give 2 safeties to the one team?
Yeah, could happen. I'm just saying, you know, they blow them out.
If you want to be realistic, it would be like 45-3.
Yeah, that could happen.
Exactly.
Or 45-7. Yeah, I like that score. But the Eagles can't get that type of scores.
No, exactly.
So, you know, because they gotta make you sweat, and you know,
make you question your sanity.
And what's going on with Dallas? I watched the Dallas game, and it's very amusing to me that the best team in football, supposedly America's team, can't win a game.
Exactly.
And
they throw their money away, $240 million of it.
Yeah, you know, but what's the result? The result is
he's another McNabb.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, And Jerry Jones is sitting in the box wondering, what the heck did I do? You know, why couldn't I, did I have to pay him more money?
Give me a helmet, I'll play.
Yeah, what's going on here?
I could see him doing that.
So Colin came back for another week. I can't believe it. I thought after last week you would have given up. No?
No, I'm very persistent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you are. Well, it's good to have you back, Colin.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the Eagles game?
I mean, it was slow and boring for most of it, but, I mean, if you get the result, then it is what it is.
A win is a win, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought for a long time the game was going to end 3-0.
Yeah. Well, could have been.
It was very close to.
Yeah, very close to that, yeah. But who do we play this week? We go down to Tampa Bay.
That's right.
Wow. That's not going to be an easy game.
Mm-mm.
Again, not an easy game.
Ever since 2003, we've hated Tampa Bay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, guys, but I'll watch it. 1 o'clock game.
Oh, I can tell you what we need.
What do we need?
Got to do a better job.
Yeah, Andy Reid. Well, Andy, you know, say what you want about Andy Reid, but his team is winning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're 3-0.
They're rigged.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying they're rigged.
They're rigged? I don't know.
And that, I mean, you saw the first game, right? They literally won by a toe.
Okay. Yeah.
By one toe,
being
out of bounds.
But it's a game of inches, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
No, it's a game of yards.
But you got to get the inches to get the yards.
Now, baseball is the game of inches.
I don't know about that.
They proved that. The Phillies proved that in New York because by inches, the Mets won that game 2-1.
Hmm.
Inches forward, the ball goes out of the ballpark. Inches backwards towards the field, he makes the catch.
Wow.
Now that's inches.
Well, congratulations to the Phillies. They
finally did it, and they did it in front of their home fans.
They're division champions.
That's correct.
And now they go on to see if they can get home field advantage.
That's right.
Which would be nice.
That would be nice. But the one thing that I thought was funny, I'd forgotten about this from last year's celebration, but the locker room turned into Chippendales.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. There was like 3 or 4 players who were celebrating the usual way, beer, champagne, but no shirt.
Oh, no shirt. Yeah, well...
You know, for the celebrations years past, you know, like at least they had the dignity to keep a shirt on.
Yeah, everybody was dressed last time, right?
Exactly. The last few times.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess because nobody had that good of a body. I mean, even Darren Dalton, everybody said he had a great body, but, you know, at least he kept a shirt on.
Do you think this crew can do it?
I think he can do it, yes.
Why do you think that?
Why do I think that? Because they have grown as a team over the last couple of times.
Okay.
They've made it to the final step. They haven't crossed the finish line. They're hungry because of how they were eliminated last year.
Yep.
And so this year they're going in extra hungry.
Extra hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Okay. And meanwhile, the people that cook the hot dogs, they're on strike.
Well, not just them, not just the people that cook the hot dogs.
Well, everybody who works at the...
No. All the Aramark people.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Mm-hmm. But there are other people at Aramark. You know, like there's people who walk around.
Yeah. They're everybody, the Aramark employees are on strike.
Right. There are some people who just stay at a beer stand. There are some that just stay at a hot dog stand.
I don't know. Is that a career, you know? Working at the stadium.
Well, it should be.
Aramark. I don't know if it is.
Because some people do stay there for like 40 or 50 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And just work on the games.
Exactly. Okay. That's what the Cotton Candy Man did.
Yeah, that's true.
He went from the, what'd you call? He went from Connie Mack all the way to Citizens Bank Park.
Okay.
And then he retired.
And did he get a retirement package?
Oh, of course not.
No, no.
Well, remember, when he started, it was probably like about $4 a game.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
Plus tips.
I think they should get all they can get, you know, in terms
I agree.
Of wages.
Especially because of the fact that inflation is still bad.
Yeah, and what Aramark does is they have a separate contract for each ballpark, each venue,
mm-hmm.
you know, which...
And apparently they're not only are they all bad, but yeah. I think one is worse than the other, but I don't know exactly what.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. But I don't know how much leverage they're going to have to get it, to get... More wages, more benefits, yeah.
Well, now that we know we're in the postseason, then the strike will continue probably.
Right.
Through the playoffs.
Well, yeah. But Aramark went and they brought other workers in, I think.
Exactly. They brought the the AA workers and the AAA workers.
Yeah. I like when they have the giant rat, the inflatable rat.
They had it there.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, in front of the ballpark.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Then you know you're
in trouble.
You're in trouble when they bring the rat out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. But I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's certain things I like.
Well, why do you like the inflatable rat so much?
I just think that's what you need if you're on strike and you're protesting. You need the inflatable rat that says something about what's going on.
Well, that's
people
weird.
People can see that rat and they know what's happening.
Well, back in my day, when you were on strike, all you needed was cardboard signs that are attached to sticks to move up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, if you were striking all night, you need fires, trash cans, or trash can fires, whatever you want to call it.
That's right. Yeah. So, this past week, unbelievable attack. Israel had planted explosives in pagers
mm-hmm.
because they knew that they were going to. The Hamas terrorists were going to give up their cell phones.
Right, because obviously with smartphones, you can track that.
Right. And they went back to old school, back when I carried a pager.
Yeah, see, Colin, back in the day, there was this thing called a pager. It was like a tiny little brick, and it would go beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, you would call it. You would dial and have a phone number. You would dial that, and it would go off, beep, 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 beep. And
if you weren't near a house phone, you had to call this thing called a pay phone.
Yeah, but you would call that number back and connect with the person. Well, what Israel did, they planted explosives in the pagers.
And everything was synchronized to go off at the same time.
Yeah, like 2,000 pagers. Now, that to me is... like real James Bond stuff, you know? you could see Q coming up with this idea. Hey, we put this explosive in the pager and we can detonate it. No one's going to believe that. You know, that's unbelievable stuff.
Well, if that's happening now, then where's your toupee that takes pictures?
Yeah, I don't know. But... you know,
or was it a toupee or a bow tie? I can't remember.
You know, Mossad. The Mossad is the Israeli Secret Service.
Right.
You know, they're the spies. You know, they're the guys that I once interviewed a Mossad agent who was retired, and he had written a book about, and it was a fiction, but who knows? You know. Yeah.
Right now, fiction is about to become reality.
Well, it was about a guy that the Mossad planted in the United States Congress, and the guy runs for president of the United States. So he's like an agent for the Mossad. And so during the interview, I stopped and I said to him, "You say you're retired, but how do I know that you're really retired? This may be a cover coming on the radio and answering my questions. Maybe you're still a Mossad agent." And he paused and he said, "Yes, that's very interesting."
Now, what I thought he was going to say, going to say, "Well, I can tell you, but I'd have to kill you."
No, what he said is that, I thought he would say, "Yeah, I'm really retired," you know. But no, it's like you never know with these guys, you know, where they're coming from. You know,
I mean, obviously he was not expecting that statement.
No, not at all. So, you know, it's hard to believe. But when I heard what they did, I could not believe it. I thought it was pretty cool.
The next day, they stepped it up to portable radios.
Yeah, they did walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
They put explosives into a lot of different things.
Yep.
Computers.
If they got Motorola phones, then you got to watch that, too.
You have to watch that, too.
Because it's a phone and a walkie-talkie.
Hey, speaking about international stuff, we have a great print broadcasting and internet journalist. He's David Tiraschuk.
That's correct.
And he's written a book, Question of Paternity, An Unaffiliated Reporter's Life. We're gonna have him on the air.
That's right.
He's going to ask him about some of these stuff.
That's right. This is his own personal memoir. So
yeah. We'll be right back after these words.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Teachers shape the future. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who'll make preventing pandemics their life's work. Sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who'll help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
When it comes to the father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
And it's good to be back here on a nice Friday morning in the Delaware Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real privilege and a pleasure to have David Tiraschuk is with us. He's a print broadcasting and internet journalist, originally from Britain and now based in New York City. He was a producer and a correspondent. He's written the book, A Question of Paternity, An Unaffiliated Reporter's Life. David, how you doing today?
Well, I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah, it's you've been in broadcasting and reporting journalism for a long time. And how did you get started?
Oh boy, I've been in broadcasting for a couple of centuries.
Well, yes.
I suppose it began when I was at college. I'd grown up very reserved and shy and withdrawn for all sorts of reasons I go into in the book. A lot to do with this question of paternity. I didn't know who my dad was, and there's a long story that goes with that. But one of the results of my uncertainty as a child was that I was very nervous in the world. I didn't really know how to handle communication with other people. And there at college, I went to one of the older universities in Britain, Oxford, thanks to a scholarship, I have to say. Our family could never have afforded to send me there. And once I got there, I felt I was surrounded by much more accomplished people, much richer people, for sure. Mm. And all my childhood nervousness came rushing back and took me over. And I decided to prescribe a cure for myself. I joined the university student body newspaper as a reporter. I pounded the pavement, asking people questions and getting stories. And there I was, getting myself to do what I couldn't do otherwise. To get my story, I had to go up to other people and ask them questions and start conversations. And that got me over my shyness. It worked. And of course, I took advantage of that and went into grown-up journalism, if you like, adult journalism in London, first of all, always in television, pretty much, except for on the side, I would do print work in newspapers and magazines. And then eventually, over time, I got to be in my favorite medium of all, yours, steam radio.
Mm.
Very good.
Yes. Well, you know, you and I have something in common, I guess, because you didn't know who your father was. And I was in a situation where my father, I knew who he was, but he died when I was 5 years old. So, you know, I never really knew him. You know, there was always something missing. And do you think your shyness and came from that, not knowing who your father was?
I think it was associated with it for sure. I am, by the way, very moved to be on a program with a father and son team. It's kind of poignant for me, and especially now that you tell me you didn't know your father because he died early, that's very touching. I think along with the not knowing who my father was, the atmosphere of secrecy that prevailed in my household. I grew up in a poor home in the border between England and Scotland. It was public housing. The household was presided over by my grandmother. My grandfather had died in World War II, or during World War II, not in the war itself. I was there, the son of one of my grandmother's daughters, the younger daughter. She was only 15 when I was conceived and 16 when I was born. And she was unmarried, of course. And this was a great scandal. And the pall of secrecy descended on the whole situation. I was allowed into the home, although my mother was sent away 200 miles almost for me to be born in another part of the country in secret. This secrecy kept coming around and defining our condition. And I was allowed into the home on condition, on certain conditions. You know, first of all was the condition that my mother should go out to work, give up her high school education, and become the only breadwinner in the family. I was apparently one more food, one more mouth to feed, and that was just too much for my grandmother. More funds were needed. And the other condition is that I would be I would be disguised or passed off as something I wasn't. I was passed off as my grandmother's child, the last of 10 children she had, 9 that survived. And I don't know how they thought they would get away with this. My grandmother was well past childbearing age at that point, but somehow or other they thought this more respectable cloak of my being my mother's little brother, not her son, was something that they could keep up as a tail to cover my appearance. It didn't last, of course. I think eventually everybody knew that I was the son of my mother. But for a long time, it looked different, and that was a source of confusion for me as a child. I didn't know whose I was in a way, and consequently, I don't want to be an amateur psychiatrist here, but I think it made me very unsure about who I was, and that sort of trailed along with me for much of my life.
Well, you know, this is a program that deals with success and deals with overcoming obstacles, and certainly you have done that. And what do you think is your secret for being able to overcome the obstacles that life has placed in your way?
Oh my! I think my grandmother would have called it stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah.
I didn't want to talk about the subject. I mean, I think I was warned away from the subject of who was my father right from the get-go. It was a topic that we just never talked about at home. And as I say, that secrecy, that kind of forbidden area of discussion was maintained for a long time. And I told myself a lie, I think, rather like the keeping of a secret is a lie by omission. I lied to myself, telling myself I didn't care who my father was. I didn't really want to know. It wasn't important. And then eventually, as I encountered more and more discontent with this and a way of life that I think was perhaps not caused by this, but certainly it was my response to it. It was to practice a life of secrecy. Anyway, I became an alcoholic. And I concealed my drinking as much as I possibly could until, of course, as it always does with an alcoholic, it became impossible to hide. And in the end, when I finally gave up drinking, I also wanted to give up secrecy. And that's when I really brought the stick-to-itiveness to bear on the problem. I just pressed the questions with my mother and for a long time, she still wouldn't tell me anything, but eventually she did give me a story. She gave me an account of how I was conceived and came to be born. A shocking account, I have to say. She told me that I'd been raped by a Catholic priest when she was 15. This was shocking sexual abuse by a person in authority, in religious authority, against a minor. And this was a shocking notion that I was born of a crime. And then I set myself the task of finding out who this person was. The Question of Paternity, that's the title of my memoir. And I spent a lot of journalistic effort, research, journalists and historians will go in for trying to find as best I could something about who this person might have been in, back in the 1940s in the border country of England and Scotland.
And without, I guess I have to ask the question, but you certainly don't have to answer it if you don't want to. You might say, hey, let people go out and buy the book to find this out. But did you ever discover who your father was, and did you ever confront
that
person?
Well, I got lots of lines of inquiry that opened up for me, and I followed them, and some led to dead ends, unfortunately, or at least I thought at the time, unfortunately. But at the same time, also new lines of inquiry opened up. And I don't want to put people off buying the book. I think it's a good idea to you know, if you're interested in the story, to read the whole thing. I hope people will. So I won't give you the details of how I managed to conclude the story. But let it be said that there were lots of setbacks and lots of difficulties and lots of changes of direction. It was a long discovery. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think I've got a conclusive, copper-bottomed, ironclad truth to tell you. In the end, I still don't know an exact identity for the person who engendered me. But I know a lot more than I did when I started.
How many years of research did you have to put into this?
Well, I guess my search in earnest would start around about the turn of the century. It was a very significant year in many ways. The story that I was first given by my mother was given to me just a month or so before 9/11. The year was 2001, and I've been researching pretty steadily ever since then. So a quarter of a century, you could say, I spent in dedicated inquiry in this matter.
That's definitely a long journey.
Yep, I would say so.
And did you do a DNA search?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
That was part of it. The modern miracle of DNA research and getting matches, and it was astonishing. It played its part in my discounting some suspects, if I can use the language of police inquiry. Mm-hmm. But it also opened up possibilities of new lines of inquiry in a different direction. And I resolutely followed those as best I could. And I got a lot of help from experts, especially DNA genealogy experts. And that did provide an awful lot of very useful and tantalizing lines to be pursued, and I pursued them as best I could.
Very, very good. What do you think about people who do these horrendous things that are supposed to be people of God? You know.
Well, it's. It can be people of God, and I don't know if you're aware, but there was a massive public inquiry in Britain into not only men of God, as it were, but also people in other positions of authority and influence over young people, teachers, sports coaches, mm-hmm. And even people in the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC.
Oh,
that
boy.
Fine British institution was rocked by the discovery of the kind of child abuse that was going on. In many cases perpetrated by much loved individuals who were stars on the screen. And this shook the whole country's consciousness. And much more awareness was gained about the horrible dangers that face children, and the precautions that need to be sensibly maintained to safeguard them. And the Catholic Church in particular has set up a whole system now of what they call safeguarding keeping a careful eye on the possibility of there being an abuse by priests against children.
Well, we had it here in Boston and Philadelphia and other places that, where there was...
No country is free of it, I'm sure.
No,
Ireland,
not at all.
Australia, as we know, and various African countries. It's terribly shocking.
Yeah, and it's, not only the abuse that goes on, but the cover-up that happened, I think, in the United States especially. They covered it, all these things up, and they sent priests to different
areas,
so they could do it all over again.
That was why my investigations were so careful. In my journalism, I actually covered church matters quite a lot. I made programs about ethics and belief. I was in charge of a whole department that made programs on those themes for commercial television in Britain, and I was familiar enough with the territory to be very careful, precisely because of what you said. The church had over time had become very clever at covering its tracks and one way or another, scrubbing the record if you went to try and investigate it, but through the front door, as it were. So a lot of my investigation was by the back door or the side door. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of help from people in the church and inside law enforcement in Britain too, we managed to make sure, and in the end got the cooperation of the most relevant diocese, and that was because of there being a new pope at the time, new Pope Francis, mm-hmm. still in office, of course, though elderly, and he helped to change the rules, and this whole safeguarding business, which the church is now practicing, is a result of that Pope Francis's change of policy. And the diocese we were dealing with was more open to fully letting us see the records and even talk to us about certain priests who could be suspects, and gave us lines to follow in chasing him down.
We were talking a little bit about the beginning of the program about what happened with the pager attacks in Israel and Lebanon, does it amaze you what's going on in the world today? Because you've seen a lot as a journalist.
I've covered lots of wars, one way or another.
Yeah.
Mostly in Africa, but other wars too. The horrible, vicious civilian massacring war conducted in the territory that became Bangladesh. They were breaking away from the post-colonial country of Pakistan. The eastern part of Pakistan broke away, and the authorities in the main capital of Pakistan sent in this fantastically organized genocidal force, really. And my early days of reporting were conditioned by that particular war to a great extent. But I've seen more wars, and they're not all as horrific as that first one I saw, but many are. And I have to say that the latest turn that's been taken in one of the two fronts now that Israel is fighting on with Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, this new turn is very shocking. And there's something about the decision to interfere with the communications of the enemy in such a way that you could, with one press of a button almost, you could cause all these mini explosions go off wherever people's pagers or walkie-talkie radios might be, suggests that you have no concern. It's a very strong suggestion that you as a military force have no concern about what civilian casualties would be collateral to this. The horrific size of that, the impact of that one piece of very clever, I have to say, electronic warfare is devastatingly horrible, I think.
Absolutely. You know,
when I first heard about it, I said, well, this is right out of James Bond. You know, it's clever. But it's unbelievable too that they would be able to do that. I read somewhere that they were planning this for 15 months. So, it just amazes me that what people will go to accomplish something like that. It's horrific. You're right.
Very horrific.
Yeah, but I think all war is horrific. You know, if you go back to World War II and the bombing of Berlin, you know, there was many, many civilian casualties. And
the bombing of Dresden too by the Allies, and of course the German bombing of London.
Yep, absolutely.
The experience that my generation would talk about all the time. It was a massive onslaught on a civilian population, a war crime, just as is happening all the time in many wars here. Even you know, relatively forgotten wars. Like Sudan, the civil war that is being waged there with horrific consequences for the civilian population.
Absolutely. What you've taught journalism, broadcast news. What do you tell young people who want to get into that industry?
Well, I tell them that it's a very worthy profession if conducted properly, and it's a useless, indeed harmful profession if it's not conducted properly. They have an awesome responsibility, journalists who come into the field now. And of course they face daunting difficulties. I don't know if they're more difficult than any previous generation, but I have a pretty strong feeling that they could be. The sheer torrent of information that flows around and comes at us like a fire hose sometimes, and the fact that with the internet revolution, the digital communications now enable all of us to be our own journalists or our own publishers if we want, and often without very much basis. Information can be made up and passed around with apparently as much speed and effect as what I would call real news and real information. And sorting the wheat from the chaff is an incredibly difficult process. And it has to be done every day and every hour by a discerning journalist who's got the job of sorting out what's true and what's not true before publishing it for themselves or for their news organization, whichever it is that they might be working for.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just wish they would give them enough time to, sort things out, whether it's true or not, rather than just say, okay, get this information and publish it immediately.
Yeah, a premium has always been put in journalism on getting stuff out fast. But on the other hand, amongst good journalists, it's more important to get it right than to get it quick. You're right, time is needed for that process. And yet the pace of communications now seems to dictate that it has to be done quickly. It's a brave journalist and a good journalist who stands up for truth and says, no, wait a minute, we need to double check this before we publish it.
Well, I wish we had more time with you. You'll have to come back and talk with us again. I really enjoyed this.
To.
I enjoyed this. And
Me too.
I'm going to buy your book, A Question of Paternity, An Unofficial Reporter's Life. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Oh, you're welcome. And the door's open anytime. Come on back.
Would love to come back.
Hey, thank you, David. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And we're going to be back right after these words.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. Or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena. Whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. Who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Teachers shape the future. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who'll make preventing pandemics their life's work. Sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who'll help combat climate change. And generating possibilities for a student who'll be the first in their family to graduate college. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
Okay. When it comes to father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
Wow.
Yes.
What an interview that was.
Was good.
Was very good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you hear there's a new series coming on?
What's that?
About some chap named P.N. Gwynn.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
P.N. Gwynn.
I'm going to watch that, yeah. I think.
I think I will, too.
I think Colin Farrell's in that series.
Yes.
He plays the...
The Penguin.
The Penguin.
Yeah, in case you didn't figure that out.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what kind of spin he puts on it.
Exactly. Will it be more Burgess Meredith, or will it be Danny DeVito, or will he actually get his own spin?
I think it's going to be more hard nose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think.
Hard pencil, thin putty nose.
Yeah, that's what I think. They made him up. I mean, you can't even tell that's Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
You know? It's amazing.
I haven't seen the makeup on him yet, so.
What was his
Maybe
name?
I can figure it out.
Copper Pot? Yeah.
Cobble Pot.
Oh, Cobble Pot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I bought the new iPhone 16.
Yes, you did.
And I'm enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
It has the Apple Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And you have my...
14.
The 14.
I'm enjoying that.
Yeah, you should be.
Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed every iPhone that I've had. In
yeah,
fact,
yeah.
A lot of times when I enjoy one so much, you're like, hey, you want my old one again?
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute, I'm still getting used to this one.
Well, Siri has improved on it, which I'm happy to see. it's much improved, so that's good. Yeah. And
much improved?
Much improved. Much improved.
So you're just throwing buzzwords out there.
No, it actually, you say, like I asked it for scores, football scores.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me the scores, and I said, thank you. And she says, you're welcome. Never did that before. Never did that. They would say, I don't understand what you're saying or something like that. So,
well, it still says that.
No, it's much improved. Much improved.
No.
So I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying it.
Or did you improve your speech better?
Well, that could be too, but I don't think I did.
Filled up with arugula.
Yeah, that's right. Bruce Springsteen is 75 years old.
Oh, my God. And he's still performing.
He's still performing. He says he's going to do it until the wheels fall off.
That's right.
Yeah. And
but he's no longer sliding on his knees.
But he has, they did a documentary about him performing and behind the scenes. And I'm going to look forward to that because I'm a Bruce fan. Yeah.
How can you really go 4 hours without taking a break? I'm pretty sure they're going to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, even 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tough, because I used to teach a class, a 3-hour class, and it was tough, but I did.
But you did take a break, at least.
No, not during the class.
You didn't?
No, 3 hours straight.
No, I would have thought there was like a half-hour bathroom break or something.
No, no. This was in kindergarten. This was, so, yeah, no.
I don't know.
So.
That's that.
Yeah, so I found out that Owen, our great nephew.
Yeah, that's correct.
He's going to kindergarten in a school that's very progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And they give him all this work to do. I don't know if that's good, kindergarten is supposed to be about fun.
Of course, yeah.
Nap time, fun, storytelling. No, they took all that away from the school. And they're making him work. He's learning French in kindergarten. I can't believe it.
Well, there was a show that did that. Not as hardcore, but... Mr. Rogers used to throw in French every now and then.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's fine, because that was a TV show.
Exactly.
That was teaching kids how to do things. But
exactly.
I don't know. And to all of our Jewish friends, Happy New Year.
That's right.
Yeah. It's...
the Jewish New Year coming up.
Coming up. Yeah. Can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
In October.
That's correct.
Which will be in a few days.
Which is usually, or not that usual, it's usually at the end of September. This time it happened to be the beginning of October.
Right. Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very short time to the presidential election. That's going to happen.
Exactly.
In November.
It's going to happen, and then I'm finally going to be able to breathe again.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to, I can't wait.
But you can't even watch the Phillies without getting bombarded with political ads.
Oh, you're going to see more ads and more speeches. And Trump wants to, Harris wants to debate.
Again.
Trump does not want to debate.
Of course not.
Yeah, we'll
because see. He knew he lost.
We'll see where it lands, where all this ends up at. But we're in for good times.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to know right away who won anyway.
No, you never do.
I think it'll take a few weeks, maybe a month.
No.
To find out. Yeah.
Not they're going a month.
It's going to be a cliffhanger. It's going to be like, who shot JR? Remember that? Who became president? We don't know.
Exactly.
Whoever it is.
Yeah, apparently that was such a big phenomenon over that year that the pilot said they're not going to land the plane until Victoria Principal says who shot JR.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And they you found out right away.
Yeah, no, she didn't know.
She didn't know.
No.
No. Nobody knew.
No, of course not. Yeah, they kept all the pages away.
They kept it a secret. I don't know. Yeah. Strange stuff, man.
The only one who knew was the one who shot him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you know how she knew or figured it out?
No.
Her agent said, I think you need a publicist.
Oh, is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. She didn't even know.
No, but eventually they told her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because, you know, everybody just took a shot on camera and then they'd figure it out.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today.
That's
right. Hope you got something from the program. Join us anytime.
That's right. We won't be here live next week, but we'll see you live in 2 weeks.
Amen. Remember, be strong, stay strong.
The Brian and Lee Show is a BLS production.